This is URN Sport.
Hubbard puts up a three-point shot, and he nails it!
Super Wednesday is ours.
And it's in! Fantastic!
All 33,000 students at the University of Nottingham, they know what this means.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome. It is 6 o'clock, which means only one thing. It's the Tuesday Sports Show. This week, you're lucky to be joined by myself, Alex, and my expert group of panellists, Jack, Chris, and Jamie. We will be covering a wide range of this week's top sporting news, including a rundown of the Hay-Bellew fight.
You know what? In my whole career, I've been making fights for nothing. Do you know what I want next? Deontay Wilder, bronze bomber.
And discussing F1's declining audience in the UK.
Lewis, I imagine you're getting a little bit sick of talking about this year, but now you've had some time to reflect, how would you sum up 2016?
It's been okay.
And previewing this weekend's Six Nations fixtures.
Now, as I said, our first priority is to beat Scotland. We'll get 33 players on the 24th of January, and they'll be competing for those 23 places to play against Scotland.
And finally, we will cover the latest doping scandal in cycling.
With the disclosures from the suspected Russian hackers over the therapeutic use exemptions, or TUEs, obtained for its former star rider, Sir Bradley Wiggin.
And we will go to Tehran to start with, to give us a little rundown on the fight between Hay and Bellew on the weekend.
Well, it was a very interesting fight. I mean, it started out pretty even. I'd say Hay was just on top. And unfortunately for Hay, he suffered a ghastly injury to his Achilles, and that really hampered his chances in the whole fight. So, and Bellew came out victor in the 10th round with the doctor throwing in the towel for Hay.
Well, Bellew did claim after the fight that he also had an injury, sustaining a broken hand in the second round. Do any of you guys think this played a part as well, or is this just him trying to kind of counteract Hay's claims?
From Bellew's perspective, yes, you might have broken your hand in the third, fourth round, but if you're fighting up against Hay, who's been riddled with injuries his entire career, he's just come back from one, and you know he ruptures his Achilles in his right ankle, and you know you're struggling to land punches on him and knock him out for the remaining five rounds of the boxing match. I think I think Tony Bellew should have perhaps knocked him out. I know Hay was, you know, definitely trying to stay in and try. You could see that Hay knew as soon as he got his injury, he knew that he wasn't going to be able to win it on points. He knew that he wanted to go out and get a knockout, and you could see that from Hay, and maybe he overstretched a bit and he just got tired way too quickly. I think Tony Bellew, yes, you know, he was very humble in his victory. You know, you saw the post-match the post-fight interviews with him and Hay both together in the ring, and you know there was a lot of appreciation between both boxers for the other fighter. So I think there's a lot of respect there. But you know, Hay definitely wants a rematch. But then again, I don't know whether or not he has the fitness to do so, because you know we've seen it with various other sportsmen. You know, when they sustain an injury, and when that injury comes, once you get an injury like that, it will always be there playing on your mind, and it will always be one of those reoccurring injuries. So you know you're going to be careful, and I don't think Hay wants to rush back into it. He wants to get back and boxing in about a month's time, but I think he's going to have to take at least 6 to 8 weeks to recover. So you know, it was an interesting fight. I think the good one.
I've actually noticed that later on, Hay didn't really mention the fact that he hurt his Achilles. Do we think this was in part down to the ridicule he got for the broken toe incident of Klitschko?
Yeah, no, I think that massively. I think, you know, what happened with the whole Klitschko, Hay, you know, kind of after the fight saying, oh, I wasn't actually 100% into it, I actually broke my toe during the fight, you know, made a lot of people just question Hay, just kind of like, kind of gave it a bit of a bad sportsmanship kind of feel to it, really. But I do think it is unlucky for David Haye. You could tell, like, throughout the fight, he really wasn't 100% into it. It could have been a really good classic fight. You know, you've got Tony Bellew. You've also got David Haye, who has, of course, you know, seen, you know, the peak of boxing at one point. Sadly, he's in a bit of a decline at the moment, as you would expect towards the end of his career. But his injury just kind of made the game a bit... Not the game, sorry, the match just a bit of a... you know, not the classic it really could have been. Do I agree with the comment necessarily? No, I wouldn't completely agree with that. I just do feel that David Haye has just been unlucky with the injuries.
Yeah, as both of you have, both Jack and Chris have pointed out so far, Haye has struggled with injuries and he's recently picked up another injury, tearing his Achilles tendon. Is it time that he retires and tries to go out high, or accept that he's in the twilight of his career, or does he pursue this rematch against Bellew?
I think it's time he retires, because he's not going to get any better, and I think with all of his injuries, he had a shoulder injury earlier in his career, and I can't see him coming back from it and being a better fighter than he was in this fight.
Bellew has called out Dontay White. And my question is, I mean, Bellew typically for his career has been a cruiserweight, while Dontay White's obviously a heavyweight. Do we think that this fight should happen from both fighters' perspectives? I mean, is it really a bit of a step down for Dontay White to fight a fighter like, a boxer like Bellew?
I think that Tony Bellew shouldn't fight the heavyweight, because he fought David Haye, and David Haye is only a big cruiserweight, really. David Haye was never a great heavyweight, and it's time he stopped propagating that myth. David Haye was a great cruiserweight, and Bellew beat him when he was probably at his lowest point in his career. So can Bellew beat one of the greatest heavyweights of this generation?
Okay, I think we will swiftly move on from the boxing onto our next topic, and go to about the Six Nations preview with Chris. I think we'll start with the England versus Scotland game, because obviously the majority of us being English, kind of, it's a game that's on the... It's capturing our imagination.
We are a bit biased here, aren't we? It's got to be so.
Do we see Scotland testing England, given the incredible run of form we've been on? Or do we only see an English win for this game?
To be honest, actually, I wouldn't be surprised if it would be the Scotland game that does run England's amazing 18-run winning streak, because I think it's 18 games now. Scotland have been brilliant throughout the Six Nations. You just kind of look at the performance they put against a really strong Ireland team. Even though Ireland had a fantastic second half, Scotland held on, and they just did enough in those dying seconds to win the game away from the Irish. And then you look at France, they were unlucky to beat the French, I thought, away from home as well. And then, of course, what they did against the Welsh was it more than 20 points unanswered in that second half. Scotland were absolutely phenomenal. And it's a young Scotland team, so they're only going to get better and better and better. Even though they are a bit reliant on Stuart Hogg, but I think that would be expected considering, in my opinion, he's by far the best fullback in Europe at the moment. And so I do generally think that Scotland could actually go all the way. They'll definitely push England for it. They'll definitely make England really work for it. And to be honest, England's been quite culpable this Six Nations. You know, you look at how they were going into halftime against Italy, 2 points down. They were losing to Wales. And then I thought actually Jonathan Davis did gift them the win. It was a really poor clearance by him. But England looking like champions, looking like a team that, you know, has got that winning mentality. They took the ball, went straight for the try line and scored. And then even against France, you know, Ben Teo gained that try. It wasn't a feeling of joy. It was a feeling of relief when we beat the French. So I think Scotland will make us work for it. Do I think that Scotland will do enough to beat England? England do seem to be doing enough to get those wins, but they will work for it, definitely.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Scotland this Six Nations. You know, they're far away from the wooden spoon team they used to be. It's really nice to see more teams in the Six Nations being more competitive. I think Italy are on the way as well, to be honest. I do worry for England going into this game. You know, I was shocked at the half-time result against Italy, you know, 12-10 down. Farrell didn't have a good game. Farrell's been sort of catalyst for England's creativity over the last 2 years, especially since Eddie Jones came in charge and went into that number 12 centre role. Yeah, I think it's going to be the most exciting game of the Six Nations so far.
Yeah, you're right on that fact. On the other side of things, Scotland's Hugh Jones has come out and said that they're not daunted by England's 17-game winning streak, and it's actually acts as motivation for them to win the game. Do we see this as just a classic bit of bravo before the game, trying to fire up the squad, or do you think this is a genuine motivation? Is there any more need for motivation in the old derby?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, any team that we've played since we went on that run in the last Six Nations tournament could have come out and said, you know, the exact same thing, saying that we are going to struggle. You know, we are obviously trying to chase down that New Zealand record. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just a bit of fun and games between the English and Scottish camps.
So we're now going over to the Jack to discuss the recent fall in viewing for F1, having a in 2016 viewing dropping by 10 million viewers, and half of those being in the UK. Jack, what is the reason for this? It's the simple question.
Well, I mean, a lot of people are pointing it to obviously Lewis Hamilton failing to win his fourth driving championship. I wouldn't say, in my mind, I wouldn't say Lewis Hamilton has really been the main person to blame for this. Obviously, a lot of the UK viewers are going to be behind Lewis Hamilton. You know, he is one of the best racers that we've produced in Formula One for a number of years now. So I wouldn't be pinning the blame on him. But, you know, it's, again, it's one of these issues that I think we shouldn't judge it at the moment. You know, there's been the whole thing this at the end of last season where obviously Bernie Eccleston stepping down, get Formula One being taken over by the American company now, so they obviously have a lot of vision for the future of what they want to do with F1. You know, the amount of changes that they're making to the cars this year, you know, it means that the cars are going to be faster. The overtaking is still going to be a bit of an issue, but the cars are going to be faster. The tyres are wider. They're more focused on aerodynamics at the moment, which I don't entirely agree with. But yeah, I don't think Hamilton can only be to blame. I think, you know, it has lost its... I think Formula One has lost its sort of charisma over the last couple of years. You know, we had it with when we had Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull. You know, he went on to win it three times in a row, which I don't know what you guys think, but for me, having just one person win, you know, 3 years in a row doesn't really excite me about the sport. It tells me that there's not really a lot of competition.
Yeah, no, I was going to actually echo a lot of what Jack said. I think you're right. I think charisma is such a good way of describing what Formula One has seemed to lose. And I think a lot of that actually comes from, one, the lack of seeming competitiveness. I think, you know, it has stagnated a bit. You know, you've got either Mercedes winning it, but then beforehand you had Red Bull dominating. So I think it kind of has been a work in progress. But also as well, like, this may sound really weird, but you know how like Formula One cars, you know, back in the day, you used to go like that, yeah. And now it's like that was like Chris Young sound effect.
That was just top quality radio.
That wasn't even Iden. That was straight from the voice. So you know how it makes that sound effect back in the day, but now it's just a bit more like a hum kind of thing. It's like it just seems to have lost its like Formula One identity. It like seems to have like been overtaken too much by the technology as opposed to the driver. And back in the day when you had great personalities like Schumacher, like Alonso, you know, that was really attracting to fans. But also I think the biggest reason, it's got to be, you know, Channel 4 having the rights. I think, you know, now it's moved from BBC to Channel 4. You know, a lot of people saying, you know, what would the viewing be like for Bake Off? If they're anything like the Formula One, then I think Bake Off is in serious trouble, but that's another conversation for another time.
Other sports, you do get the casual listeners. Well, Formula One, it is now generally just the petrol heads who keep listening. I mean, Jamie, Taran, you both admitted that the sport isn't your cup of tea particularly. What would it have to do really to attract your views?
I think we need more excitement. Everyone get in the same car, see who the best driver is, and let them fight out on the track. None of this team ethics nonsense. Just let everyone drive as fast as they can with the same car. That's what everyone wants to see, really, if we're honest about it.
I don't even know how you can improve it. I did have to go back to the drawing board and create completely. I don't even think it is a sport. Like, I'm just going to put it out there. I don't think there's any sort of physical fitness involved. There's no sort of training to be done. I mean, I have heard... petrol heads, as you say, in the past shout at me and show me virtually, you know, images of these guys and how ripped they are, but you know, really, can you go, you know, are you inspired to go down to the local gym to train to be an F1 driver? I don't think so.
And now we're going to move on to Jamie here for a bit of doping in cycling. So there have been some allegations against Team Sky and in particular Bradley Wiggins. Can you give us a bit more information on that?
Yeah, the story's as suspicious and shabby as the way I'm going to explain it, to be honest. Basically, back in 2011 in France, Wiggins was given a suspicious parcel, which the team, which the British Cycling Sky have labelled it as a Jiffy bag, which doesn't sound suspicious at all, I don't think. This contained lots of TUEs, which means therapeutic use exemption. He had an injury at the time, I'm not sure what it was, but they were for that reason. But there was a lot more than he needed, and obviously when you overdose, they're gonna help, it's gonna be performance enhancing. And this week, basically, Dave Brailsford is under a lot of scrutiny. He could possibly lose his job. He's being asked to resign. And the story this week that's come out is that he's gained a lot of support. Now, I don't think the support he's got is very set in stone at all. It's through Twitter, and it's through a lot of the cyclists, presumably, he trains. Some of them, definitely Geraint Thomas in his Sky team, tweeted, it shouldn't even need saying, but we all back Dave B 100%. I've known him a long time, and I wouldn't want anyone else leading Team Sky. Now, take note of that 100%, because every single member, pretty much, of Team Sky have tweeted using the term "we back him 100%." It's not a hashtag or anything. It's just that they've all, I'm guessing, it's almost like they've sat in a caravan where they go out on the training camps, and they've just all gone, "Should we tweet this?" And they've pretty much tweeted the same thing. Has no sort of, it's not a good argument, to be honest, for Dave Brailsford. I don't know. What do you guys think? I think this could possibly be the end of Dave. I really hope it's not. I really hope he is innocent.
I mean, Team Sky has, it's probably one of the biggest kind of cycling,
oh, by far, yeah,
by far, groups in probably the world, and it would be a shame to see this team kind of be so kind of have the name dragged through the mud, and particularly Bradley Wiggins, who was pretty much a national hero of many of our Olympics. I mean, do you think that this whole scandal, even if it isn't true, has tarnished their name to an extent?
Yeah.
Go on. I think definitely it has. You know, I think once you get these connotations of cheating, especially after Lance Armstrong, which we're going to come on to in a minute, I think it always just carries around with you. I mean, it's not good for Bradley Wiggins. I've not mentioned, actually, as well, I was going to come on to it, Dr. Freeman, who has been out of the limelight. He has not been supported at all, and he's really the main guy in these drug allegations. He's the one that took the package, he's the one that ordered it in, and he, in 2011 until pretty recently, he's failed to keep a medical record of each athlete he trains, and he's put this down to apparently an error, which doesn't sound legit at all. Yeah, and no cyclists have actually come out to support Dr. Freeman, so, you know, you think if you're not going to support your own doctor, you know, it really is suspicious, in my opinion.
This is URN Sport.